Coach, he scores!
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're back once again with the Leafs Nation podcast. With me again is Danny Gray. How's it going, Danny?
Oh, it's going pretty swell. Just a nice, relaxing Sunday.
Excellent. Yeah, same here. So our Marlies, not off to a hot start in their last series against the Norfolk Admirals. Dropped two games to none, and probably the best player on the team has been Ben Scrivens.
He's been the best player really the whole playoff run, right?
So yeah.
Been sort of the Marlies' MO. It's like the Leafs of the early 2000s, right? Rely on some clutch goaltending. So maybe that bodes well for the future Leafs.
I know, eh? I want to add like an addendum to that, you know, relying heavily on the goaltender, and I'm okay with that.
Oh,
like
yeah,
Michael absolutely. Bluth in the paper. I'm okay with that.
I'm not complaining. But I think it's worth noting, too, obviously, that, you know, Matt Fratton and Nazem Kadri and, you know, Mike Zygmantas as well, who's not, you know, as much as Don Cherry wants us to believe, the glue that holds this team together or anything. But I think the three of those guys is sort of really, the Marlies were going to be in tough against Norfolk regardless. But taking those, you know, three guys out of the lineup really doesn't help things.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if Greg McKegg can get into the lineup in the last. Well, okay, no, I shouldn't call him the last two games, the next two games or three games rather, because they're in Toronto. It's not exactly a long commute from London to Toronto. He should be able to get into one of those games. They've got injuries. I really don't see any advantage to. Well, okay, maybe there's an advantage to keeping Colton Orr and or Jay Rosehill in the lineup, but.
Maybe they know something we don't.
Yeah, well, maybe. Dallas Eakins did say that they wanted to keep together the group that made it this far. But the truth is that Colton Orr hasn't played that many games, so it's not like he's been the one dragging this team to the finals. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, what the hell? Like, you're down two games to nothing. You got nothing to lose here in this series. You might as well throw Greg McKegg out on the ice, see what he can do.
Well, I mean, they put Spencer Abbott in, so it's not like he's been with the team slightly longer, but more or less the same sort of thing. It's silly to sort of have Colton Orr be the reason you don't want to put the guy in. Maybe there's some other stuff though. Maybe they don't feel like he's ready, or conditioning wise, he's tired after a long OHL season and playoffs and run to the Memorial Cup Finals. So they don't want to expect too much from him. But I think people might expect too much from him, right? If he comes in and doesn't really save the day, then that might sort of hurt the way people see him, right?
Yeah. One player I think I would love to see in a Leafs uniform next year, even in October, not even just as an injury replacement, is Corbinian Holzer. I think that, if only Burke could rid us of, one of Komisarek or, I'm less eager to get rid of Shen, but yeah, that would probably be a good idea. If he could rid us of one of those more expensive defensemen, I'd love to see Corbinian Holzer get a shot. I mean, he's not going to put the puck in the net a whole lot, but as a third pairing stay-at-home defender, I mean, he's probably going to come in cheap, and honestly, he can't be any worse than the defense we've had, so, some cap space is at least some improvement.
Yeah, he'll definitely be cheaper, and he definitely can't be any worse, right? Like you said, he's a bottom-pairing guy, and nothing against, Colby Armstrong, overpaid players on the brain. Nothing against, Luke Shen or Mike Komisarek personally.
Wait, what are you talking about? Nothing against him? I have everything against that.
I said personally.
Oh, well.
From what we've heard, especially Komisarek, Myrtle always talks about how well-liked he is, and he really takes this whole being a shitty defenseman thing pretty hard, and that's understandable. But I think that it's a pretty immovable contract, so it's tough to say at this point. Yeah, obviously, Holzer would be a guy you'd love to see step in, but there might not be room for him. Whereas I think a guy like, is Nicholas Deschamps, right? The guy's had a pretty good playoffs, and I think he deserves a chance to show that, you know, he can play some minutes. Now, I think the one thing the Leafs have done or been hesitant to do is put guys like him on the fourth line, you know, or on even the third or fourth line, right? They think if this guy's got any offensive ability, he needs to be on the top two lines. And I think that's a mistake because you look at, you know, the job New Jersey's done with their fourth line and even the Kings as well and other sort of successful teams, the guys they have on their fourth line are also capable of putting the puck in the net. So, you know, I think that he deserves a spot or a little bit of a tryout, at least, you know, come to camp, see what he can do. I'd like to see, you know, he had 5 shots last game. He's been pretty good in the playoffs. You know, I haven't really watched a lot of it. When I watch the highlights, he looks, you know, sort of, he's a guy you notice out there, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, he's been pushing things offensively for the Marlies. And the other thing is that the fourth line doesn't always kill your prospects, right? I mean, it's not like every single player who winds up on the fourth line is going to be stifled offensively for the rest of his career. I mean, heck, Tyler Seguin managed to become a good player despite having spent some serious time in the bottom six when he was, you know, still developing.
Right, Brad Marchand as well. You know, obviously he does have a decent defensive game, but he also provides some offensive, you know, pep.
That's an awfully generous way of putting it.
Yeah, so I think that's sort of been one of the misconceptions with the Leafs, especially during Brian Burke's tenure, is that, you know, the fourth line is where talent goes to die, sort of thing, right? You want guys who can chuck knuckles and I don't really know what else, maybe skate. I mean, Mike Brown's a good hockey player and everything, but he doesn't really have many, you know, flashes of offense. So I think that it would be interesting to see what a fourth line with at least some offensive capabilities would look like, right?
Yeah, I think it would take something of a philosophical change for Brian Burke. And, you know, whatever, I'm speculating here. But I think it would take something of a shift for him to suddenly move away from this sort of system he has going where the fourth line is just a bunch of meat sacks. I mean, I would love to see a fourth line, you know, whatever, just promote, let's say, D'Amigo, Deschamps, and, yeah, I don't know.
Greg Scott.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Why not have them kill penalties? Or why not, you know, have some guys who could actually skate or maybe, God willing, you know, threatening the other end a little bit. So I would love to see that happen. I don't see Burke going for it.
No, I don't think so. And I think that you have to take sort of the good of Brian Burke, you know, what there is with the bad, right? He's going to want a certain style. He's going to want certain players to fill certain roles. I think he has admitted, though, you know, in the last couple of years that the top six, bottom six sort of isn't as stringent or as rigid as it once was. And he did, you know, demote Colton Orr, obviously, you know, calling up Jerry Rosehill wasn't much of an improvement, but I don't think Jay Rosehill is going to be back on this team next year anyway. So I think that there are plenty of players in the NHL who can fight as well as actually do other things. So you have to sort of find those guys, and it's not very an efficient use of a roster space if that's all the guy can really do. Like, let's be honest, that's the only thing Colton Orr could do.
Yeah, yeah. And it will be interesting to see some of these expiring contracts, where these players wind up, you know? I mean, Jonas Gustafsson is... I mean, would Columbus even take a flyer on that guy at this point? Probably not.
No, I think these guys have players in their system that they'd prefer to fill. I don't think Gustafsson plays. I don't think he plays in the NHL next season.
I don't think so either.
I can't even imagine a team sort of taking an interest in him.
Which would be a comforting thing if none of those players ever went on to play in the NHL. You know, because we've become used to Leafs leaving and proceeding to have, you know, okay, maybe not great NHL careers or anything, but, you know, NHL careers. At least at this point, if they go on to do absolutely nothing, we'll know that at least Brian Burke is cutting the right fat.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any concern about that. We've watched him play for the last three seasons. God, has it been 3 years? We've watched him play enough hockey to know that that he's not going to amount to much. And even if he does, there's sort of nothing in his play that makes me believe that we should have seen that coming, right? Mike Smith this year, you know, I'm not going to go and say, oh, Tampa, Dallas, you guys let Mike Smith walk away, because what in Mike Smith's career led you to believe that he was going to be the kind of goalie he's been this year, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that you could. So I think you're in a good place with Gustafsson, which is a weird thing to say. But there's no worry that he's going to come back and make you look stupid, because I don't think anyone.
You are in a good place with Gustafsson. If he is like a kilometer into your rearview mirror?
Right. So he's not going to come back to haunt us, I don't think. And no. Even if he did have one season, I don't think anyone's going to say, "Oh, you should have seen it," because really, you look at his track record, and it's not as if there's anything there to sort of tell us that.
I think if I'm not mistaken, he played more games than any of our goalies over the last 3 years.
Yeah, next one, wow. He played. He's played 99 games over the last 3 seasons for the Leafs.
Wow.
Reimer's at 67. And then we've got J.S. Chiguer with 41, Vesa Toskala with 22, Ben Scrivens at 11, and Joey McDonald at 5, and UC Renus at 1. So since the 2010 season, he's the leader for the Leafs. So that's fun.
That's tragic.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's not a franchise that's benefited from as good as the goaltending was, you know, in the few years there with, you know, Cujo and Belfour and stuff like that. I still think that, you know, it's been a wasteland. As much as everyone sort of makes fun of Philadelphia, like, you look at some of the goalies who have played for the Leafs, you know, in the last few years, and it does not look good.
No, no. Well, yeah, I don't think you're going to find many people argue with you there. All right, so have you watched the first two LA New Jersey games?
I watched bits and pieces of game one, actually, but I didn't watch any of game two. I've been interested, I guess, but not as much as last year. I think that one of the downsides of having the, you know, team I don't hate in the finals is that I have no reason to watch. I felt like, you know, last year if I watched, the Vancouver Canucks might not win, or I had to sort of watch for that sort of hate factor. Whereas now it's like I'm pretty ambivalent, so I'm happy really if either team wins. So I'll watch the deciding games, you know, as the series progresses. But games one and two, I really haven't felt like I've missed out on anything.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I've been watching it, and it's some good hockey, really, honestly. It's exciting stuff to watch. But I will agree that there is a little bit of hatred missing from my perspective, from the fans' perspective, right? And, you know, when a lot of people were, you know, upset, or maybe not upset, but a lot of people thought that the Jets going back to Winnipeg would be stupid, you know, and a lot of people refused to cheer for them on the basis of the fact that, well, you know, no one will ever cheer for the Leafs when they finally managed to go deep in the playoffs, right? Even the people from Winnipeg, even if, you know, we support them now, they're not going to remember that. They're going to be like, well, screw the Leafs. We hate them.
Right.
But honestly, I think one of the best parts of them coming back is that I have another team I can hate. You know? I need teams I can hate. Without it, well, you know, the league's just a little less interesting.
Yeah, I think so too, definitely. Like I said, I'm interested in what happens, but it doesn't sort of have the draw that, I mean, and you don't have that hate between the teams as well, right? Like, you know, as bad as the hockey was at times between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, you weren't not watching that. Like, it was compelling, right? They hated each other so much, and you knew you were going to see something that night when you watched. And with LA, New Jersey, like, they're both great teams, obviously, but there's not that chance that something's going to erupt, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, I've thoroughly enjoyed what I've seen, but yeah, it's very low-stakes hockey for me, I guess.
Yeah, and I've watched a lot of hockey this spring, right? I mean, I've watched sort of pretty much the first three rounds of the playoffs. I watched most every game, or as many as I could catch, right? So it's just it's a long time, and it's a lot of hockey when, you know, you don't care as much about it, right? Whether it's love or hate, there's nothing to sort of to draw me in, really. And again, like I said, I'll watch the elimination games, and I'll watch the series as it progresses. But missing games one and two really, you know, isn't going to bother me all that much.
I've got to say, I'm lost on nights when there's no hockey. I don't know what to do with myself. I mean, you know, I have Game Center, and so even on nights when the Leafs weren't playing, I was watching some ridiculous Western Conference game.
Have you got into the archives and started watching games from like the 90s?
Only here and there. No, not a whole lot.
No.
Yeah. Soon. That'll be, you know, sort of the doldrums of summer. That's what's going to happen between July 1st and whatever the start of the season is, October whatever it is, or at least, you know, training.
It might even be longer than that, JP, with the potential lockout.
Oh, God, I can't even, no, I can't think about that. But yeah, definitely in the slow months of summer, I'm going to be all over those archived games. All right, so one last sort of item on the agenda. The Leafs have signed Leo Komarov. They finally made it official.
Woo.
Yeah. I think
goodbye, Joey Crabbe.
I know. I think the biggest, I don't know, the biggest part of this story is that it means hopefully some of our overpaid players are not returning. Unfortunately, it probably means Joey Crabbe is the only one to leave.
Yeah, I mean, you have a little bit of, you don't have a lot of flexibility there. You'd like to sort of send, you know, Colby Armstrong and Mike Lombardi, Mike. You'd like to send Colby Armstrong and Matt Lombardi packing. Not that Lombardi's bad or anything, but that $3.5 million, he's not going to give you anywhere near that kind of value.
Yeah.
I mean, to really, because where do you put him in the lineup? The third line is way too expensive. The second line, we already have Mikhail Grabowski, and he's not a top-line center. So there's really sort of, you know, he's sort of, you can't, same with Colby Armstrong again. The guy's got to sit on the third line, so we're going to have what between him? If the third line is Armstrong, Lombardi, and Connolly, I don't even know if I can watch. That's $9 million on the third line.
It's a $9 million train wreck.
Doing nothing. And so I don't know if I can live with that. But yeah, hopefully, and we always sort of like to think that these moves are never in isolation, right? They didn't just bring him in because they like him and like what he can bring. They brought him in because they think, you know, they'll have a spot for him or something will open up, you know.
I'd like to think so. I mean, in the KHL, he was roughly half a point per game, and that doesn't translate so nicely into the NHL. If you look at the NHL equivalency numbers, so, you know, probably not going to put up a lot of points. We'd be lucky to see, very lucky, I think, to see 10 goals out of him. And at 5'10 and about 190, he's not exactly a bruising player either. I'm curious to see what Burke or... I'm curious to see what Carlisle also has in mind for him, you know, where he's going to fit into the lineup.
Right. Well, allegedly, the Leafs have been sort of trying to bring him over for the last couple of seasons. This isn't just sort of, a last ditch or they just sort of suddenly became interested in him, right? So you have to think, you know, they did draft him, and I'd imagine they obviously have scouts in Europe watching him play, in the KHL. And so I think that it'll be interesting to see what they see in him and sort of, I'm sure, you know, Burke spoke with Carlisle and what sort of role they envision for him. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I think that when I wrote my sort of post on this, I think that the best thing is that, number one, it prevents Burke from throwing any money at a bottom six guy July 1st, right? Like a Jordan Tutu or a Travis Moen or somebody like that. There's lowers the likelihood that, you know, they're going to throw some money at him because they've got this guy now. And even though his cap could potentially be as high as 1.2, it's obviously not going to be that high. So he's pretty cheap. And yeah, it sort of maybe pushes Armstrong or Lombardi out the door or, you know, just down to the Marlies, right?
Yeah. One thing I will say I noticed about him when I looked at his HockeyDB numbers is that when he was playing in Finland, he racked up an incredible amount of penalties and minutes. I mean, 144 penalties and minutes in 56 games. I mean, right. That's some serious misbehaving.
Well, apparently, yeah, Burke sort of, you know, there was an article in the Globe and Mail that Myrtle posted, and Burke sort of comments where, yeah, he's, you know, he's a bit of a shit disturber. He's tough to play against, that sort of thing. I mean, that's one of the things that Burke has always said. He wants this team to be tough to play against, but I think that puck possession teams are tough to play against, right? No one says, oh man, those Detroit Red Wings, they're sure easy to push around and play against, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So there's lots of different ways, that people can be tough. But I think that, yeah, if that's sort of the type of game that he's going to bring, but yeah, I don't, can the Leafs afford to take any penalties? Jesus, we have a brutal penalty kill. I don't want a guy who racks up the penalty minutes.
Well, interesting to see where he settles into.
I think I don't necessarily think it's a two-way deal, right? So I don't think his spot's sort of guaranteed. You know, maybe he'll end up with the Leafs, or maybe he'll just end up on the Marlies, and we can sort of see what happens there. But I think it's pretty low risk. I wouldn't call it high reward, obviously, but I call it low risk, moderate reward, right? You're not gonna,
yeah.
It's not gonna be the worst thing in the world if they don't sign him, or if he turns into nothing, or if he has to spend the rest of the time on the Marlies, right? So I think it's pretty, some people are freaking out, but,
He's already 25. We already more or less know what he's gonna give us, so, I don't know. Nothing to worry about. Anyway, alright, well, maybe we'll cap it there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess, yeah, there's not like the draft's coming up, but it's too tough to say sort of what's going to happen. I'm excited about it. I think that a lot of people are worrying over nothing, especially with all this time sort of between. And you know, obviously, teams can't really project what they're going to do, so you don't really have an idea of who they're going to take, and everyone's freaking out. Oh, the Leafs are going to draft Tom Wilson or some stupid off-the-wall pick.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens. And a lot of people, oh, maybe Burke trades down. I think that if he can't get one of the top forwards, he might reach for a guy who's projected still top 10, like Forsberg or Faxa, and take one of those guys. But if not, I think he'll draft a defenseman and you know, just be patient, right? I think that the Leafs aren't in really a position where they can say no to a prospect or a player that good, right? So
yeah,
I don't think there's any desire to sort of trade down, and I'm not really too worried about it.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess that's all. Well, you have yourself a nice afternoon.
Yeah, you too. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right.